Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are happy to have with us this hour Senator Lincoln Chafee, former Republican U.S. Senator from Rhode Island. He was defeated in 2006 when Democrats took over Congress. Senator Chafee wrote a book about his time in the U.S. Senate called Against the Tide, How a Compliant Congress Empowered a Reckless President. And we will talk with him about politics then and now, and we will welcome your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Lincoln Chafee served in the U.S. Senate as the Republican senator from Rhode Island from 1999 to 2007. Currently, he is working as a distinguished visiting fellow at Brown University. He has also been mentioned as a candidate for governor of Rhode Island in 2010. He is author of the book Against the Tide, How a Compliant Congress Empowered a Reckless President. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
So, against the tide, you were swimming against the tide when you were in the Senate?
Yes, when the Bush-Cheney administration came in, pressure on their heels of promising to be uniters and not dividers, remember that? And also saying that they'd have a humble foreign policy and regulate carbon dioxide, and then quickly going back on those campaign promises and being very divisive and being very arrogant. And not regulating carbon dioxide. I expected Congress to push back and say, we have a role to play in this government. But instead, they went along with everything, as we now know.
Well, you describe in the book this meeting that you and some other moderate Republicans had first thing with Vice President Dick Cheney, and that was pretty amazing.
Yes, that's the first chapter of my book. And as it turns out, the five moderate Republican senators would have lunch every Wednesday. And we invited Dick Cheney to join us. And the night before, on a Tuesday night, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in December of 2000 in favor of Bush-Cheney. And he still joined us for lunch the next day, Wednesday at noon. Mm-hmm. And at that lunch, he spelled out a very divisive agenda, arrogant foreign policy, and big tax cuts, and us moderates. And it's a 50-50 Senate, remember that? And the moderates, we just didn't push back. It was a critical time to say, with all due respect, Mr. Vice President-elect, but we're not going to go along with that.
Yeah. Well,
and one by one, my colleagues lined up for the big tax cut. That was the first big challenge in the spring of 2001, before September 11th.
Yeah. Well, why do you think that happened? Why did everybody just fold?
That's a subject of the book. What happened? Why did everybody just fold? And it started with the, as I said, before September 11th. Mm-hmm. So many people think that everything changed on September 11th, but it was the spring of 2001, before September 11th, when the Bush-Cheney came in with such a radical agenda, and the tax cut was the first $1.6 trillion tax cut. That was the first battle, and it ended up with Jeffords leaving the party, switching the control of the Senate to the Democrats. But a big battle, and too many Republicans and respected members of the Senate who had seen the deficits and slowly worked to surpluses caved. And there's a number of explanations. But probably top of the list is that Bush and Cheney were just so aggressive, and the Congress just wasn't up to the task to stand up to these very, very aggressive executives.
Well, you know, Senator Chafee, I didn't know, just because I didn't follow it all that closely, you were the only Republican to vote against the Iraq War resolution?
Yes, I was one of only two to vote against the tax cut. John McCain, if you can believe it, was the only one. Only other Republican. I was the only Republican to vote against the Iraq War. That was an easy vote. I never believed that Saddam was a threat. One of only 23 in the Senate. Only Republican to vote against Sam Alito, just the new Justice of the Supreme Court. So I fought them every step of the way. I never trusted them after they went back on their campaign promises of the fall of 2000. And Rhode Island's a very Democratic state, but ultimately in the elections of 2006. The Rhode Islanders wanted a change in the Senate, so they, my opponent, even though it voted so often against Bush Cheney, my opponent in the 2006 election said, we need six seats, and this is one. So I was a kind of collateral damage, if you will.
Yeah, you were just kind of swept up in this anti-administration voting wave, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of your conservative colleagues said you were just a Republican in name only, though, right?
I would defend myself as a true Republican. I like to protect our surpluses. I think that's Republican value. I like personal liberties and not infringing on our First Amendment rights of free speech. We had a flag-burning amendment that I vote, one of only three Republicans to vote against. I believe in protecting the environment. I think it's a good Republican value. Not getting involved in foreign entanglements isn't. That's traditional Republicanism. So I've seen my party change. I still consider myself a true, in a way, conservative Republican.
But you endorsed Barack Obama just prior to your Rhode Island primary. So at least for the primary, you didn't register as a Republican, I take it.
Yes. Well, I've seen the party change. So when I call myself that party has changed. That doesn't exist anymore. Caring about fiscal conservatism, the environment, personal liberties, fear of foreign entanglements, helping the government, having the government help the less fortunate. That's changed. So I disaffiliated, became an independent, and watched all the candidates, many of whom were my former colleagues running for president. And Senator Obama's had the best campaign. He's had the best vision and the best message. I'm a avid supporter.
Yeah, I'm smiling because I'm looking at an article on your endorsement of Obama that just makes note that back in 2006, Barack Obama was campaigning in Rhode Island for the victor in your U.S. Senate race.
Yes, yeah, and not once but twice. I had ribbed him a little bit when we came back after I lost. We had the lame duck session. We crossed paths, and he kind of apologized. Says once would have been bad enough, but did come twice.
Yeah,
but I care about our country. I think he's the best person to lead it. No, let bygones be bygones.
Yeah, a lot of people might wonder. Well, you know, Senator John McCain is not exactly adored by the conservative wing of the Republican Party. They say he's way too liberal or way too moderate. Why wouldn't one moderate Republican like another moderate Republican?
Yes, he's in my book quite a bit because we worked together on some environmental issues, drilling in the opposition to drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, ANWR. As I said, the voting against the big tax cut, and also the Gang of 14 that was heading off the changing of the rules in the Senate. He was a leader in that. But ultimately, it's the war vote and his stance on the war, and that trumps everything else. This is a horrible war, a horrible decision. Saddam Hussein was not a threat, and I can't vote for anybody that supported the voted to give Bush Cheney a free rein. Do so much destruction in the Middle East.
Yeah, and that also disqualifies Hillary Clinton because she voted for the resolution authorizing it?
Absolutely. And there were two votes that day, October of 2002, and one was offered by the chairman of the Armed Services Committee because the Democrats were in control after Jeffords left, Carl Levin from Michigan. And his amendment would have just said, slow this down. Slow this down. Let's let the inspectors do their work. And Senator Clinton voted against the Levin Amendment even. She cannot defend that vote against the Levin Amendment.
We are talking with Senator Lincoln Chafee. He is a former U.S. senator representing Rhode Island. Talking with him about politics then and now, talking with him about his book, Against the Tide, How a Compliant Congress Empowered a Reckless President. We welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon, it's Talk of the Nation. After 1 o'clock, the controversy over Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's pastor, has erupted again And Talk of the Nation will examine the very latest and talk about race and the election. That's coming up after 1 this afternoon on Talk of the Nation. We are talking with Senator Lincoln Chafee about his new book, Against the Tide, How a Compliant Congress Empowered a Reckless President. Talks about his time in the U.S. Senate from 1999 to 2007. And before we go to the phones, Senator Chafee, let me ask you about Senator Obama and yesterday his denouncing the comments of the Reverend Jeremiah Wright in a much more forceful fashion than he had in the past. Did he need to do that?
Yes, he's always risen to the occasion. Every time there's a question, he stands right in front of the microphones and gives a stirring speech, and he did that in this instance. Directed it, addressed it head on, and spoke eloquently and forcefully. I thought it was great.
Yeah, but some are saying that that because he took too long or a little bit too long to show his outrage over the Reverend Wright's comments, that might hurt him in the upcoming primaries. Do you think it will?
Well, I think he did have a long association with the pastor on the good side, and the fact that he just would not respect that Senator Obama's in a tough campaign, I think it was deserved for the senator to stand up and denounce him. And it was, I thought the timing was good.
I'm wondering if you have comments on, you know, Senator Clinton did win the Democratic primary in Rhode Island, 58% to 40% for Barack Obama. Why did that happen?
We're very similar to Pennsylvania. We have a high elderly population. They're kind of rigid in their thinking. Most of the Democratic apparatus here in the state were behind Senator Clinton. The president, Bill Clinton, had been here many times. They had a deep machinery in operation. It was one of her bigger wins, although the Obama people had a lot of enthusiasm here in the state. I was surprised at the margin.
Yeah. Do you see this fight for the Democratic nomination for president going to the convention?
Hey, Indiana's the big one. That's next. That's the big Tuesday, May 6th. I guess Senator Obama's got a big lead in North Carolina the same day, but Indiana is virtually tied with low undecideds. And so if he can pull that off, I think that gets momentum back to him. Ultimately, in the delegate fight, the math just doesn't work for Senator Clinton. I don't know what her strategy is when she looks strictly at the numbers.
Sure, she thinks that that she might be able to convince the superdelegates that she is the only one who can win those big states that are important for a Democrat to win in order to win the presidency.
Yes, that would take a lot of switching by superdelegates. I assume her strategy is just to keep hammering in on the negative side of Senator Obama until somehow he cracks, but in the meantime, it's hurting the Democrats' chance in November.
Yeah. Let's take some calls. Our lines are full for the moment. Chris in Janesville is first. Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm Lincoln Chafee.
Hi, Chris.
That's a nice name. I watched you, Collins, and Olympia Snow throughout the whole Congress of Bush and Cheney's destruction. And I'm proud of you all being there and going against the fray of the rest of the Republicans. It helped out tremendously for the little people, for you standing up with these conservative judges that this Bush was trying to push in there. They have a conservative agenda. I just have a lot of things to say, like the people, the head people, the Bush and all them, have no idea because they're so far away from reality, communities, crime, just because of all of them tearing up and destructing everything that was put in their way.
When you think of what they were handed, Chris, they were handed a surplus and a peaceful world and when they took the oath of inauguration. What the damage they've done in 8 years, eliminated the surplus, the historic surplus, and of course we've got conflict all over the globe, and some of it just it seems interminable, I mean, with no easy answers. Tremendous damage. But the challenge is now to repair that, and I'm sure that we can do it. Americans always rise to the challenge.
Yeah. Hey, what did you make of President Bush yesterday holds a news conference and admit that the economy is in rough times. We are in very difficult times, he says. There are no quick fixes. He could wave a wand. He would to lower gas prices and the like. But then he blamed Congress. He says it's Congress's fault that the economy is in this shape. Is it Congress's fault?
No, we can't have it both ways. Try and minimize the role of Congress at every step and increase executive powers. With the signing statements on every law that Congress passes and strengthen the executive. But then when something goes wrong, I'll blame it on the legislative branch. That it just screams out for a new leadership. And I know I share with many Americans the can't wait for the 12009, as they say.
Yeah. Why hasn't Congress under the leadership of Democrats been able to really be effective in pushing through a different agenda or stopping this war in Iraq or bringing troops home and the like?
Well, that's the subject of my book, exactly. Why didn't the Founding Fathers set up Congress, and particularly the Senate with six-year terms, to check a rogue executive? They clearly foresaw that an executive branch could be dangerous, and they set up the House and the Senate, and as I said, six-year terms so that two-thirds of the senators are not up at any given time. And so many respected members of Congress just didn't do their jobs, frankly. And it's just a moment of vacuum of leadership right now in American history with a rogue executive.
Next we go to Tom in Subiski. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. My comment is during the Republican reign, there was a lot of earmarking and buying of votes through the bishops and stuff in like the House. Do you think if they would get rid of earmarks or decrease taxes enough and just make the government liable for just making legislation and rules and not having to spend so darn much money?
Absolutely. It's all about discipline. And once the dam breaks on that discipline, it's a flood. And we saw that with the Bush-Cheney administration come in. I'm not a big fan of President Clinton, but there was fiscal discipline in the 90s, and hard work to get to the surpluses. And we had them, first time in my memory. I'm 55 years old. We finally had surpluses, and a lot of hard work went into it. And once the tax cuts and then the war and then to the flood of these earmarks, there was no discipline, no fiscal discipline. And as I said earlier in the show, you think of Republicans as that's something we stand for, fiscal discipline, but the dam broke, and a lot of repair work needs to be done. However, I will note that all these tax cuts that were passed in the spring of 2001, they're sunset, so they do expire. So you hear the president talking about making the tax cuts permanent. They do expire. So there is a chance in 2010 to revisit the wisdom or lack of wisdom in these tax cuts. Mm-hmm.
Lincoln Chafee, our guest. He served in the U.S. Senate as the Republican senator from Rhode Island from 1999 to 2007. He is the author of a book about his time in Washington, Against the Tide, How a Compliant Congress Empowered a Reckless President. We welcome your questions for Senator Chafee at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Brian in Alberta Lee is with us. Where is Alberta Lee, Brian?
Oh, down there in the bottom there in Minnesota, not too far from
okay.
Iowa.
All right, hi.
Hey. Yeah, I was, when this vote came for this war, I actually have so much blame for the Democrats. I think what the Cheney-Bush juggernaut was able to do so successfully was build up this propaganda on, playing on the fears of 9/11. I basically don't buy that these Democrats thought that there was a legitimate threat. I think they just were afraid that if they went against this, emotional situation that was, high at the time, they could have lost their seats. I think they're just saving their bottoms. I'd also like to know from him where he thinks the how and when the neocons did take over, because I agree, he's more of an old-time conservative than than the neocons have ended up being. I'll take my answer off the air.
I agree with you that so many members of Congress were thinking of themselves, and particularly those that wanted to run for president, Senator Clinton, Senator Kerry, Senator Edwards. They were all thinking of themselves and not of the premise of this threat that Saddam Hussein allegedly posed to us, because there was never any evidence that he, real evidence that he was a threat, weapons of mass destruction. It was a lot of talk, a lot of rhetoric, and just a shameful performance by members of the Congress. I will note, you said to save their seats, Paul Wellstone was up. The vote was taken in October of 2002, and he was in a very close race in Minnesota for his seat just weeks later, November of 2002, and he voted no. So there were some brave people in the debate. Wisconsin split. Feingold was a no. Cole and I. Just, to me, horrible, horrible decisions. And so many of them are still there, and a few of us are not.
I just saw in the paper that I think it's tomorrow is the anniversary of the infamous mission accomplished speech on the aircraft carrier.
Yeah, what's that, 5 years?
Yeah.
Five years later?
Yeah.
5 years of war and destruction and atrocities and cost, financial and in every way.
Mark in Richland Center, hi, you're on the air.
Morning, Joy and Senator. I appreciate the conversation. I would like to go back to this business of Hillary Clinton voting for the war. There's not a lot in the press these days about her statement that she would use nuclear weapons and obliterate the Iranian people if the leaders of Iran were to do something against Israel. This warmongering, even on the part of a supposed democratic, peace-minded liberal, is insane. And it makes no sense that we should take a stance against others having nuclear weapons and then threaten to use them ourselves. I'm just absolutely appalled at the fact that she would say it, and then there's no even coverage of her statement and the use of nuclear weapons in the press today, and she just said that last week.
Yes, I agree. When I heard that, and so many of us are talking about it, and my last chapter of my book is, if the Democratic Party cannot rise up as an opposition party and represent how strongly so many Americans feel, it's almost time for the Democratic Party to go away and a new party to come along. A party that represents the confidence that America's strong, and we don't have to show all our insecurities, how tough we have to be, manifested by comments like Senator Clinton and obliterating Iran. It's the wrong language. And I like to make the point, Mark, who is second in military might in the world? And if you add up, you know, however you judge it, by spending or by aircraft carriers and bombers and all the weapons, if you add it all up, I think the United Kingdom is second. So there really is no second. And we have to just realize have our confidence and lead the world responsibly and not make irresponsible, threatening statements like Senator Clinton did. So it all goes back to, it's shameful to think that that's the opposition party, that's the Democratic Party, one of their spokespersons speaking like that. It's depressing.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that option that you propose in the book. I thought it was a third party in addition to the Dems and the Republicans, but you're saying maybe the Dems should just go away?
Yes, I think that the rise of a third party would be at the expense of the Democratic Party, particularly if Senator Clinton wins in the convention. I think that my last chapter is going to be very, very relevant. Senator Obama represents something different. The rise of his candidacy represents everything I'm talking about in that last chapter, the need of a new direction in this country and a confidence, an inner confidence of who we are and how we're going to lead in this 21st century.
Mm-hmm. Next we go to Mike in Langlade County. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Good morning. I would just like to ask your guests, by the way, it's nice to talk to you young fellas. I'm pushing 70. What was the supposed reasoning when Mr. Cheney spoke with you prior to 9/11 about our aggressive foreign policy? And is there any truth to the rumor being pushed by Kevin Phillips that the notion was to take over Iraqi oil supplies and break OPEC? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Mike. At that lunch that we had the day after the Supreme Court ruled, two things surprised me. One was that so soon after the Supreme Court had ruled, I mean, just hours earlier, the vice president, was making these remarkable statements about the direction of the new administration. It wasn't coming from the president. It was coming from the vice president. And secondly, that my fellow moderates just didn't, at that critical time, say, in a 50-50 Senate, we don't agree with you. And with, we had five at that table, five Republican moderates. We should have stuck together and said, with all due respect, we're not going to go along with this agenda, and sent a clear message right away. And once these aggressive personalities in the executive branch were able to roll Congress, if you will, roll the Republican moderates and then roll Congress on the tax cut, that set the stage for everything else. And September 11th happened, and as one of the earlier callers mentioned, people are angry and traumatized. And then it was on to Iraq, which had nothing to do with September 11th. So it's been a moment in history, and I was there. I had a front row seat for it in the Senate, watching mistake after mistake after mistake be made. And as I said earlier, this administration was given surpluses and a peaceful world when they took the oath of office, and how that has changed. And I was just there for it.
Bill in Elm Grove, hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi there. Senator Chafee, I want to commend you for your stance against this unnecessary, unholy, unjust, and unconstitutional war. Now, my point, I think if you can get the word to Senator Obama before the elections in Indiana and North Carolina, here's the thing I'm thinking of. Before the war, the price of oil was about $30 a barrel, something like that. Now it's over 100, about 115, 120. So it's pretty obvious to me that this war and the disruption in the Middle East and the restriction on the flow of oil from Iraq has caused the price of oil to go up, and the instability it's added to the world. So Bush, Cheney, McCain, and Senator Clinton are responsible for the $3.50 gasoline people are paying. This is what's on people's mind. And I think if you get a chance to talk to Senator Obama between now and Tuesday, he needs to mention this, to tie Senator Clinton to the price of gasoline, $3, and I just paid $3.79 a gallon for gasoline this morning, unleaded.
Yeah. Well, I'm on the email list with the Obama campaign. I'll take your advice, Bill, and pass that along. And the caller previous, I believe it was Mike, was talking about the price of oil. And we had a chance to address our consumption at the dawn of this new century, and that was the real challenge we should have embarked on. And we could have done it. And we still can do it, but just another missed opportunity.
Yeah.
And Senator, the subject, another one part of my book, I have a good chapter on that also.
Senator McCain and Senator Clinton both supporting the idea of a gas tax holiday to not collect the federal gas tax throughout the summer to, I guess, relieve some of the pain that we're seeing at the gas pumps. Senator Obama saying, hey, no way, that's just a gimmick. You agree with Senator Obama, I take it?
Absolutely. It's just that's the perfect example of the short-term thinking in the Congress. Take a big, complex problem and condense it down to an instantaneous gratification measure. It's shameful and emblematic of everything wrong with Congress and their weakness.
Yeah, but
this is a long-term decision to address our consumption, get more hybrid technology, mass transit, address our consumption. We can do it.
Yeah, do you think maybe, though, the American people want to be pandered to a little bit?
Of course.
Because we don't like paying these
leadership
gas prices. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a complex problem that needs a long-term solution, in my view, and we can do it together, working together, and with other civilized countries that have addressed their consumption, dealing with China and India and the huge economies that are taking off, and the fact that they'll be dipping their straw into this finite resource the world's oil supply. A billion people in India, 1.3 billion in China, all of a sudden coming onto the market. This is serious.
Yeah. We are talking with Senator Lincoln Chafee, author of the new book, Against the Tide, How a Compliant Congress Empowered a Reckless President. Lincoln Chafee served in the U.S. Senate from 1999 to 2007. He was defeated in the 2006 elections when Democrats took over Congress. Senator Chafee writes about his time in Congress in the book Against the Tide. Currently, Lincoln Chafee working as a distinguished visiting fellow at Brown University. He has also been mentioned as a possible candidate for the governor of Rhode Island in 2010. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. She'll be joined by Arianna Huffington to talk about her new book, Right is Wrong, How the Lunatic Fringe Hijacked America, Shredded the Constitution, and Made Us All Less Safe. Arianna Huffington joining Kathleen Dunn coming up after 9. We are joined this hour by Senator Lincoln Chafee, author of the book Against the Tide. Our next caller is Michael in Whitefish Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
In the past year and a half, I've had some personal and some indirect experience with really flagrant abuses of the Patriot Act. Now, I haven't read the Patriot Act, and I can't really condemn it, not knowing it completely, but I know of its abuses, and I was wondering if the guest could comment on that and whether he thinks it has served its purpose or whether it should be defeated or what.
Yes, the Patriot Act, it did pass 99 to 1,
yeah.
And of course the one senator being Senator Feingold from Wisconsin.
Right.
So a lot of staunch liberals, Pat Leahy and Ted Kennedy, voted for it. Paul Wellstone, so many people that were looking after civil liberties, you would think. And I think the, in general, it's been exaggerated how bad it is. There are bad elements, particularly the library books, the ability to get into the library searches of citizens. But by and large, it was meant to just shift the law that allowed you to get the a warrant to tap phones over to some of the electronic devices that are more modern, BlackBerries and cell phones and pagers and the like. That's the way I understood it. So my view is it's been a little exaggerated. Of all the nefarious things that the Bush-Cheney administration has done, this one, I think, has been a little exaggerated. As I said, there are some reforms that are needed, particularly in the library area.
Mm.
But only one member of the Senate voted against it. That's says something.
Yeah. And Russ Feingold says it's because he did read it. But anyway, Jim in Green Bay, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to ask you a question about a fellow New Englander, and that would be Joel Lieberman, who is currently an independent, aligns himself with the Democrats, but acts like a wild-eyed right-wing Republican. And I just wonder if the body snatchers got him and there's an empty pot somewhere in New England. Or do you have any comments about his behavior, say, the last 6 years?
Well, he's also endorsed John McCain and is on the campaign trail with him a lot.
Yes, it's incomprehensible to me that someone as intelligent as he is so gung-ho on this war. I mean, Saddam Hussein was never a threat. We were in Baghdad in, what, 4 days? He wasn't a threat. And we've gotten ourselves involved in this intractable situation, a true quagmire in which there are no good options. And Senator Lieberman's just a head cheerleader for it still 5 years later. And as Joy said, we're coming up to the anniversary of Mission Accomplished. It was, we had no international help. We're mired in a dispute between all the ethnicities in Iraq. Huge, huge mistake. Colossal error of judgment. And this intelligent Senator Lieberman is still out there saying it's a good idea. To me, it's incomprehensible. I can't understand it.
Jesse in Eau Claire is with us now. Hi, Jesse. You're on the air.
Hi, Joy. I just had a question for the senator. You know, with Bush's approval rating at, like, what is it, 28, 27 now, and the list of all of the crimes that this administration has committed, why isn't Congress making the moves to impeach him? And I also wanted to mention, maybe you can set me straight on this, that I heard that if he is not impeached, that when he leaves office, he can put a seal on being investigated for like 12 years, which, you know, 12 years, I don't know how old the president is, but by the time they would be able to open him, he'd already be out of, you know, he'd probably, I don't know, he might even be, you know, pass away or something like that. So if you can maybe elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure. First of all, one of my favorite times in driving cross country was in Eau Claire, by the way. I was driving cross country and stopped in Eau Claire. And, I guess the University of Wisconsin at Eau Claire. Just bumped into some fun people. Oh, it was so much fun. And so good memories of Eau Claire. And as to the question of impeachment, when you think of the prevarication starting right from the beginning by this administration, we're going to have a humble foreign policy, we're going to be uniters, not dividers, we're going to regulate carbon dioxide, we can afford the tax cut, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, we're going to see peace between the Israelis and Palestinians. I mean, prevarication after prevarication. Why isn't Congress acting? Probably the answer is, first of all, we've endured the Clinton horrible or just unseemly impeachment proceedings. And I don't think there was a great appetite for Congress to do that again. And secondly, impeaching President Bush leads us to Vice President Cheney, and that's not a good trade.
Yeah, well, there were bills
so
to impeach
it's
Cheney, too, though. Yeah, there were bills to impeach Vice President Cheney as well. Congress wasn't about to take that on because of the trauma it would put the country through?
Yes.
Chuck in Green Bay sends this as an email. Do you think term limits would give Congress people more spine to do what is right rather than what will get them reelected?
That's been debated, and so many candidates take the term limit pledge, then immediately go back on it. You see that happen so often. If you legislated it, put it in the law that there are term limits, I guess that would be possible. My own view is that the citizens have to act. I'm not a fan of term limits. It's up to the voters to voice their outrage and try something new.
Forgot to thank Jesse in Eau Claire, and so you drive through Wisconsin often, Senator Chafee?
Well, I worked out in Alberta, Canada for 7 years, so occasionally I'd make the trip across, and great memories of going through Wisconsin, except for that there were some billboards along the way, I remember.
Oh, maybe some blocking the scenic beauty, you mean?
I think it was the Dells.
The Wisconsin Dells. that's the famous tourist spot, yeah.
Were there too many billboards as you approached the Dells, maybe? Yeah. But other than that, a beautiful state.
Kathleen in Townsend. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for having this program, Joy. And hello, Senator Chafee. My husband and I recently traveled to Texas. And I was absolutely amazed, and I've been telling my friends here in Wisconsin that if they want to see where most of our $9 trillion deficit is, they should go to Texas. Have you been there recently?
Why do you say that, Kathleen?
From the minute you cross the state line until you get down to Mission and the southern coast, there is building, 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 and a great deal of it has to do with the Defense Department and all of the rest of the supportive supporting agencies for the government.
You think Texas is getting a fair share or more than its fair share of pork? Is that what your point is?
Oh, I would say more than its fair share.
Yeah. Awesome.
Well, there's something echoing about President Eisenhower's last speech on the military-industrial complex. There's something that's resonating. Mm-hmm. That speech as he left office in, the early months of 1960, and his warning. Here's a former general, two-term president, issuing this warning about the rise of the military-industrial complex, and we are caught in it. And as I said earlier, we're such a strong country. I think we need to lead in a different direction than with our might and our saber rattling.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Kathleen, for the call. Next, we'll go to Mark in Solon Spring. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
The senator there mentioned just a little while ago that it was the people that could maybe make this change. And I always preach that myself, that, you know, the politicians are doing things that aren't appropriate to this country. But the people, the public themselves, have to hold some of the responsibility of consuming what makes these politicians or these other big people rich. And if we were to maybe quit driving as much as we do, or buy vehicles that get better mileage, and quit consuming the junk that comes from China, then maybe things might change.
My wife just went out and bought a scooter. Mm-hmm. She came home at night last night from her work, but she has her scooter, and I don't know what the mileage is, but certainly better than a car. So I think, yes, people are going to start to make good decisions.
Yeah. It seems Mark thinks that maybe we unfairly blame politicians for everything. Do you think politicians unfairly get the blame for this stuff?
Well, there's a lot of justification, I think, in the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
We had a moment in history, as I said, we had the dawn of the new century with surpluses, and I tell in the book the story that Silvio Berlusconi, the Prime Minister of Italy, addressed a joint session of Congress, and he said he hosted the G8 summit in Italy in the early months of 2001, March of 2001, and he looked at the room, and there, the G8, those are the eight industrialized countries, there were the Germans, Schroeder talking with Putin, the Russian, there was Kazumi from Japan talking with Bush and Blair, all the Cold War and World War II adversaries in the room together talking and laughing and having a cordial time. And he said, what a peaceful world we were handing to our children. An age of lasting peace beckoned. And I remembered those words as I sat in the chamber listening to them and saying, yes, an age of lasting peace beckoned.
Mm.
And that's what we had at that moment. And why it changed, I think you can blame the politicians.
Yeah.
That's our job, to ensure that we continue to have surplus and continue to hand to our children a peaceful world.
Yeah, I'm not. We talked a little bit about it when we first started the program, but I'm not sure I understand that with this less than a mandate from the American voters when it came to the Bush administration, both in 2000 and 2004, for that matter. Why was Congress still so willing to go along with a less than popular administration for all these decisions?
You couldn't have put it better, less than a mandate, less than a mandate, a 5-4 vote in the Supreme Court, losing
right.
the popular vote, winning by one vote in the Electoral College, and they come in, they have the audacity to come in and say we're going to take everything and wreck it.
Yeah.
And my fellow moderates were not there. The Democratic Party was good up until September 11th, and then they disintegrated. And the Republican Party, so many of them who were elected in the 70s and been there for years and years, decades, should have stood up or quietly gone down to the White House and said, we're not going to go along with this. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
And that's the subject of my book.
Yeah. Tom in Fond du Lac is with us now. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I wonder if the guest could comment on the influence of Israel on the U.S. foreign policy. Here you have a country of, what, 6 million people? And it just seems like the tail is wagging the dog.
Well, it's the lobbyist is very strong in Washington. I talk about that a little bit in my book. The tragedy that I see is that there are opportunities for peace in the Middle East between the Israelis and Palestinians. I do believe that. And in fact, it's the longest chapter in my book in which because I was on the Foreign Relations Committee and chairman, if you can believe it, of the Middle East subcommittee. And so I traveled to the region frequently and attended many, many hearings. And we had opportunity after opportunity to push the peace process between the Palestinians and Israelis. And the key to it is a Palestinian state living side by side in peace with Israel, a viable, contiguous Palestinian state, and that is the West Bank. And it involves the the settlements that are that Israel continues to build in this disputed territory. It's very complicated, but I do think there are opportunities for peace. Don't forget that Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas, was elected by the Palestinian people with 60% of the vote that they wanted after Arafat died. They wanted a different direction. The Palestinians did. And we didn't do anything to empower him. And then in the next elections, Hamas was elected. So we were going backwards. And this is all critical to stability in the Middle East. Yeah. And our success in Iraq, I do believe.
Yeah, let me ask you some before we run out of time about the current race for president. Why do you, Senator Chafee, think that John McCain is running neck and neck with either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama when they're faced off against each other in these polls? Why shouldn't a Republican just be, you know, struggling to stay in above single digits in polls like this? Why would they be almost tied?
Yeah, so John, you have to give Senator McCain some credit for that. He is the maverick, and that appeals to so many people. And then Senator Clinton has just embarked on this scorched earth policy against Senator Obama, and perhaps it's better from the Democratic perspective to have all this vetted out early, and if Senator Obama can be the nominee. We will have heard all these Reverend Wright and the like type of things as you go into the campaign.
Yeah, well, if
but you have to give Senator McCain credit. I mean, he's had a, except for the war, a fairly moderate voting record.
So here's one for you, Senator Chafee. Let's say your candidate, Barack Obama, it does not get the nomination, and it's Hillary Clinton versus John McCain. Who do you vote for then?
Well, I have a rule for myself. I cannot vote for anybody that voted for the war because I feel so strongly at that moment in history that we didn't do our jobs, that the Bush-Cheney people were telling us something that was patently false, that Saddam was a threat. It was patently false. There was no evidence behind it, and I just can't vote. So I'll have to write somebody in. I'll write Senator Obama in probably, but I can't vote for anybody that didn't ask the right questions. We just finished with Vietnam. We're back in another quagmire, and That trumps everything else for me.
Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us and talking with our callers.
Well, you have a great state in Wisconsin. I hope to come back, drive through again.
I hope so, too, and I hope we can show you places other than the billboards at Wisconsin Dells.
Well, Eau Claire, it was fun.
All right. Lincoln Chafee is our guest, author of Against the Tide, How a Compliant Congress Empowered a Reckless President. Lincoln Chafee served in the U.S. Senate, a Republican senator from Rhode Island from 1999 to 2007. He is working currently as a distinguished visiting fellow at Brown University. He is also mentioned as a possible candidate for the governor of Rhode Island in 2010. We thank him for being with us, and we thank Carmen Jackson for producing this program and Christina Taylor for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.